Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Author Ben Hewitt's new book is Saved, How I Quit Worrying About Money and Became the Richest Guy in the World. When Ben Hewitt met Eric Gillard, he was amazed. Here was a real-life rebel living happily in small-town Vermont on less than $10,000 a year. Gillard's no bum. He has a job, a girlfriend, good friends, and strong ties to the community. But how he lives his life and why launched Hewitt on a quest to understand the true role of money. Hewitt will be speaking at the Curiosity Forum tomorrow night at Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. And it's a pleasure to welcome Ben Hewitt to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Again, the name of the book, Saved, How I Quit Worrying About Money and Became the Richest Guy in the World. So give us a sense of how you met Eric and how he sparked your curiosity.
Well, originally I met Eric through a mentoring program that our children were involved in. Eric does a lot of sort of wilderness skills with young children in the area. And so we had sought him out actually to do some of this with our kids and a group of other children in our region. And you know, the thing that I was sort of originally drawn to in Eric was it had nothing to do at least at the time I had no awareness of his financial condition, and it was much more an awareness that you know, as soon as I met him, and just about everyone who knows Eric would say this, he just came across as one of the most sort of contented and grounded people I'd ever met. And I think, you know, most of your listeners, if they think about the sort of group of people that they associate with, almost everyone, you know, so can sort of identify someone who has that that quality. They just feel so comfortable in their skin and you know, in their place in this world. And so I was really drawn to that aspect of his character. And it was only later, as I got to know him a little better, that I became aware that he was living on, at the time, about $6,000 or $7,000 a year. And so, part of me was just sort of fascinated to study, you know, the potential correlation here, or even, you know, was there a correlation between the fact that he just didn't rely on money to the extent that most of us do in the moneyed economy, and his evident contentment. And, you know, if so, was his contentment a result of this sort of self-imposed thrift, or did his self-imposed thrift sort of come out of his contentment? It's sort of like, you know, which is it, are we putting the cart before the horse here, or is it, I guess, a chicken or egg type of story? So that was, you know, sort of what I was first drawn to and why I wanted to start looking into his life a little bit closer.
So for him, it was a decision. It was not necessity. It was a decision.
That's right. It is a decision. And, you know, Eric will be the first to admit that it's a decision that in some ways is enabled by a certain type of privilege. You know, he is choosing this, and he is able to choose it in part because he is part of this really sort of interdependent community of people. I mean, this is the other thing that's like really sort of enviable about Eric's life, is that you know, he is part of this community that is really engaged with one another and really interdependent in a way that, you know, I think is becoming increasingly rare in this country. And often it seems to me that, in a sense, we've exchanged that interdependence for something else, which is sort of a level of dependence on institutions that are far beyond our control. And so it was really, that was another thing I was incredibly drawn to. And, you know, Eric does not view himself as poor. He views himself as being incredibly wealthy. And again, you know, I really was drawn to that idea that, you know, our notion of wealth in this culture is so immersed in the mentality of money, you know, and how else might we look to define wealth and our personal economies?
I think you make a good point that it is rare in this country. However, in reading the book, I do have to say I wonder if it is rare in Vermont. This is very much a Vermont story.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I mean, I think there is something to that. But I also think it is in some ways a rural American story.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say it's not, you know, it can't be an urban story. I'm a creature of rural America and rural Vermont, so that's what I know. So I feel most comfortable talking about that. And I think, you know, that we have increasingly in this nation seen sort of the real wealth of our rural communities sort of stripped out from underneath us, extracted basically from our communities. And, you know, part of this story, I think, you know, maybe not so much explicit, but maybe implicit, is, you know, how we both, you know, on a personal level and on a communal level can begin to sort of bring that wealth back into our communities. And I'm not talking strictly about monetary wealth, although, you know, money is a component of it. I mean, one thing that is really clear to me, that became really clear to me at some point in writing this book, is that this book is not about a rejection of money. It's much more about an embrace of these other sort of aspects of the human experience, these other sort of facets of our wealth, so to speak.
So what do you feel, I think the question that probably most people who come upon this subject probably wonder the same thing. And I understand his point and your point, but that question being, what do you give up? The answer is, you know, you gain, I mean, where the story of the book is that you gain much more than you quote unquote lose. And yet, there are, for want of a better term, sacrifices that are made, mm-hmm. because they're cultural.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. I mean, there is a certain exchange here that's happening, I think. And, you know, there are certain things. I mean, I can see how someone would look at Eric's life and, to a certain extent, you know, my life, because, as you know from reading the book, I have a family of four, and we live on, you know, I think it's approximately half the median income for a family of four in this country. So there is a certain exchange there. We do not, and Eric does not, have a lot of disposable income to sort of throw at, you know, new clothing and a lot of the technological gadgets that have become almost sort of an assumed part of our lives in early 21st century America. I can tell you right now that I'm sort of fretting about my 17-year-old Subaru making it down for my reading tomorrow night. You know?
Right.
So there are certain things that we are exchanging. There's no question about that. There's something that is given up. However, one thing that is gained, and I think perhaps the most profound thing that is gained, although I think there's a lot of things, but one of them is a degree of autonomy over the way we spend our time that most people in this society no longer have. And, you know, that was another thing I was really drawn to about Eric, is that, like, in a sense, it's like he can't afford, and we can't afford a lot of the things that have become sort of the presumed accoutrements to the modern American life. That is true. But we can afford, to be spending our time in engaged in things that we are really passionate about. For Eric, a lot of that passion comes through in, you know, what he does with children in the woods, out in nature. For us, a lot of that passion comes out in, you know, what we do on our small farm here. For me, in my work, I mean, I'm not really paid that well to write books, believe it or not. You know,
I know, it's shocking. It's usually public radio money usually that you get.
Yeah, but I can do it. I can afford to do it because I have, chosen to have a certain relationship with money. Again, it's like over and over I have to emphasize that this comes from a certain place of privilege. You know, it's like I do not have, I did not grow up wealthy. I do not have a lot of family money backing me, but I have inherent privileges, you know, some of which are through no choices of my own, just simply being of the sort of, you know, the dominant race and, being male and being, you know, fairly articulate. I'd like to think, you know, these are all things that have really, you know, enabled me to live in this manner. Other privileges that I've enjoyed that I have to acknowledge is that, you know, simply that my wife and I, for instance, bought land at a time when we did not have to go deeply into debt to afford to do that. We had the skills to build a house and to do it ourselves and to do it out of pocket. So these are certain privileges that are not afforded to everyone, and I really want to make it clear that, you know, that's part of the reason that I have the luxury of, like, you know, being on this phone line having this sort of high-minded conversation about money with you.
Well, you know, talk about that conversation, and it is, you're going to be part of this Curiosity Forum at Battenkill Books, which is a wonderful program, and it's a beautiful bookstore, and they do a terrific job there. So I assume you've had conversations like this with audiences before, and it will be a lot of the discussion that we just had about ultimately what's important and what you can put aside.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the thing that fascinates me about money and these discussions is that the extent to which money is just connected to almost every aspect of our lives. And so, I've done a number of readings now, and the discussions have been unbelievably interesting to me. And people are so engaged because, you know, they all have a personal story about how money touches their lives. I mean, it's very universal. We all need it. And yet it's also very personal because we all have slightly different, relationships and slightly different situations around money. And, you know, the discussions have ranged from, like, you know, education to death to fear. I mean, these are all to food. I mean, the way we do food, you know, it's very much a money story. It's a healthcare. These are all... at their core, money is just a core issue of all of these aspects of our lives, and which is why I think it's just like such fertile ground. And, you know, I think there is just this incredible sort of percolating awareness in our society that the way we've been doing money, simply both in terms of our sort of personal relationships to money, but also in terms of simply the mechanics of how money works or doesn't work, frankly, in our society, you know, is really, really flawed, and we need to really be rethinking that.
Author Ben Hewitt's new book is Saved, How I Quit Worrying About Money and Became the Richest Guy in the World. Ben will be speaking tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at Battenkill Books as part of their Curiosity Forum. You can find out more by going to battenkillbooks.com, battenkillbooks.com. Ben, a great pleasure. Thank you very much. Very nice to have you here, and good luck with the Subaru.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time. Take care.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.